call the Civil Law Committee to order. Representative Lesh, you want to move the minutes from the last meeting?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I do.
To 2/13/12. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Representative Grunhagen is going to move to take House File 1254 off the table for consideration in front of the committee. I don't think those are not debatable. That's not a debatable motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Representative Bills, come give us a recap of your bill, but also the amendment that you have provided the committee. Which one, A4? In fact, why don't we move the A4 amendment, because that's the language you prefer to discuss the bill as, right?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Drazkowski moves the A4 amendment. Any discussion to get the bill in the shape the author wishes? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. To the bill as amended, Representative Bills, if you could refresh our memories. Members, some of us got together in November, and to those in the audience, we did have a working group hearing on this bill as well as a hearing last spring, if you recall. And so the A4 amendment is some of the outcome that the author's been working on to change this bill and to make it more workable. And so Representative Bills, why don't you tell us what the bill does now as amended?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And there are many stakeholders that we work with and continue to talk to. But the amendment basically breaks down into four different parts. The first part confirms that it's the right of the property owner of a single family dwelling to have a flag. The second part of this goes into political signage, establishing that townhomes, individuals who live in townhomes or single family dwellings, have that right to post the political signage as according to state statute. But then it also, in subdivision 4, allows for an opt out by those associations that are started after August 1st, 2012, that they might opt out of that provision for political signage by majority vote. And then the last provision deals with the lien and foreclosure items, and what we've done here is tried to put into statute where you cannot as an owner be foreclosed on for minor violations such as, you know, maybe possibly having a birdhouse up or a parking violation or painting your door the wrong color. Whereas the major violations could then be foreclosed upon, such as dues, assessments, or a major infraction in terms of landscaping or structural design. So that's the amendment that you're looking at before you.
Do you have some testifiers, I understand, Representative Bills?
Yes, I do have some testifiers. So,
Representative Bills, and also I want to go back to one of the provisions. I think you may have misspoke on the opt-out provision being
places. Sure.
I believe that's for existing associations.
Yes,
is that
yes,
right?
Yes. Applying the.
Do you want to clarify that?
Opt-out applies to the existing associations within that time frame that I established. So.
Okay.
Moving forward from that date that they're established. So.
Representative Bills, is Ellen Stanley, is that one of your
yes.
witnesses?
Yes.
If they want to proceed, that's fine. Ms. Stanley?
My name is Ellen Stanley.
If you can identify yourself for the record, welcome to our committee, and I understand you're here to testify in support of this bill.
Right. My name is Ellen Stanley. I live at 12821 Edgewater Path in Apple Valley, Minnesota, 55121. And I got involved with Eileen Tompkins and represent, because I called Representative Bills and I said, do you have any idea what these townhome associations are doing to people? I myself was foreclosed on, and the property that I purchased subsequently was a foreclosure. And I don't think I need to educate you guys on Glass-Steagall, commodity future modernization, credit default swaps, bucket shop swaps, bucket shops in the stock market. And what really brought my attention to what was going on within this underlying problem within the mortgage bubble burst was I opened my door one day and the Star Tribune had an article on my doorstep that said, here come the foreclosures. And it was dated June 11th, 2006. And it was almost like a shotgun start. Let's go, here come the foreclosures. I foreclosed on my property, and it just seemed that no matter what I did to try and prevent the foreclosure, it was pretty much the accepted fact that I was going to foreclose. My townhome association had decided to replace the windows in 2005, and at their board meeting, they violated three, if not more, sections of their own bylaws in agreeing to replace these windows. And there were several of the residents who went in and said, we don't want the windows replaced. That's not what this place needs. If you're going to do anything, take the siding off, wrap them with Tyvek, and put new siding on. No, the board decided that they were going to replace the siding or the windows. And subsequently, I called the board and I said, you know, you really can't do this. You're violating your own townhome documents with this action. And I was told, get a lawyer. And I called them again and I said, you're violating a different section of your own townhome documents. And I was told, get a lawyer. I had the money to pay for these windows, but at the time I had some personal things going on and my money was tied up due to family court and divorce. And I called the Townhome Association and I wrote them a letter, the management company, and I said, I have the money to pay for these windows, but you'll have to wait. And I showed them a copy of the court order from family court stating that that issue would be decided at trial. And they said no. And since I had a lawyer, I asked my lawyer to please take steps to prevent this foreclosure process. And the lawyer just didn't do what he could have done. He seemed unwilling to assist me in the legal remedies that were out there. It was decided that I was going to foreclose. I went to the CDA for help. I tried to get a homeowner's loan and homeowner's improvement loan to help me pay for these windows. And I was turned down. They were unwilling to assist. As soon as my divorce became final, I received a check in the mail from my townhome owners association telling me how much they wanted for the windows. I immediately, within 30 days, sent them a check in full for the windows. They didn't call me and they never put the check through the bank. After 30 days of watching my account and waiting for the funds to go through the bank, I called them and I said, I sent you a check in full, did you receive it? And the reply was, it's not enough. From all of the indicators that I was getting from the news reports on the television and what other people were going through and the newspaper articles that were saying, oh, here come the foreclosures, I started to think, there's nothing I can do to prevent this foreclosure. And I got a lawyer, started talking to the Townhome Association's lawyer, and in the end, for approximately $5,000 worth of windows, I ended up paying $11,081. Now, in the state of Minnesota, when I went to the Townhome Association with a verbal promise to pay and a written promise to pay, that should have been enough of a contract for them to say, okay, we can wait on foreclosure proceedings. She's made a promise to pay. And instead, they chose to move forward with foreclosure proceedings against me. They didn't have to do that. And I considered it to be foreclosure for profit. It didn't seem to matter how much money I put forth to pay them, I was going to foreclose. I lost approximately $84,000 in equity in that foreclosure over $5,000 worth of windows. I lost personal property. I lost my inheritance. My grandmother had left me a Schilling upright grand player piano that I had to leave behind because I didn't have any place to put it anymore, and the cost of storage would have been well more than what I could afford to do to keep my grandmother's piano. I have a son, and at the time he was 8, 10, 12 years old while we were going through this, and the emotional devastation and the emotional anxiety involved in losing a home severely affected his studies and his personal behavior. I finally gave up on trying to fight the foreclosure situation and just decided to stay until I got that 90-day notice. It was like, I'm going to stay. I got the 90-day notice that they were coming to put the lockbox on my house in February, and in February of 2010, I left. I left our home where my son had grown up. I left thousands of dollars and irreplaceable personal property, and I lost, as I said, approximately $84,000 in equity. I forwarded my mail, and about 6 months after I moved, I got a letter that my townhome association was going to take me to court and file a judgment against me. After everything I had been through with them, with objecting to the windows and saying it's not what we need, telling them that they were violating their own bylaws by installing these windows the way they were doing it, and paying, trying to pay, and having my money refused, and then ending up paying more than double what these windows were worth, they were still chasing me for money. And I got this notice in the mail, a notice of judgment in the mail, saying, we want more money. And I think it was about $3,500 was what they were looking for. And I thought to myself, no, I'm done with them. They foreclosed on me. They succeeded. I bought my way out of foreclosure. I moved on. I have the documents here that show that I paid the $11,000 that they wanted for the windows. And I supplied an answer to the court regarding this $3,500. And I went to court, pro se, into civil court, and I basically ran some numbers, and I said, I don't owe you any money. You owe me. You did not have to move ahead on the foreclosure proceeding. That was a choice. I gave you a promise to pay. I showed you why I couldn't pay. You owe me. And they took it all the way to the very day of the court trial, and I tried to negotiate with them. I said, you know, you owe me, I'm here, send me a check. And instead, we ended up at the courthouse with a judge who decided when the Townhome Association's attorney looked at the papers and looked at the fact that I had a right to a trial by jury on this situation, he decided to make a motion to dismiss. So based on the Townhome Association's motion to dismiss the case, it was dismissed with prejudice, and the judge looked at me and he said, "Do you know what that means?" And I said, "Well, explain it to me." And he said, "It means they can't sue you again." And so I was happy just to walk out of the courtroom, even though I didn't get my funds on the counterclaim that I told the Townhome Association they owed me because it was dismissed with prejudice. I was just happy to be out of there with the knowledge that this Townhome Association could no longer abuse process and take me to court for money. I am fully in favor of this bill, and I don't think it goes far enough. I don't think that townhome associations should have the ability to foreclose on you on liens for assessments. I think if the townhome associations want to do these large projects, and typically there's supposed to be a general fund that you're paying into every month with your association dues to cover things like roofs and siding and streets and any other kind of landscaping issues that come up. There's supposed to be money set aside every month by the Townhome Association to cover those large costs when they come up. And what the townhome associations have been doing is doing these large projects and assessing the homeowners for them at the cost of the project. And not only did I foreclose, but I know for a fact I had two more neighbors back in my neighborhood who foreclosed. And they did not fight the process. They did not try to pay for the windows. They just said, "Okay, we're out of here." And the windows went in November of 2005, and they were gone by March of 2007. My neighbors who just said, "I'm not fighting it," and waited for the notice to leave. Okay.
Thank you, Ms. Staley.
Well, to move on, I don't think they should have the ability to foreclose based on assessment liens. They're supposed to be responsible enough to cover these assessments through their general fund. What has been going on is, aside from the assessment liens where they foreclose, they want the ability to foreclose on fines and fees and things like fining you for not pulling your garbage cans up in time, or fining you for wanting to put a flag in your yard, or fining you for parking violations. And they want to take that all the way to foreclosure if you don't pay these fines and fees. And they do have a network, and they do have an association of associations. Yeah. And the same
Ms. Stanley, the same month that I was
in court, yes?
Please just keep your comments directed to the committee. And
I'm just looking around behind me.
We do need to keep moving. We have several others that want to testify. So
the same month that I was in court with my previous townhome association, a year and a half after I had vacated that property, the same month I got a letter from my current townhome association telling me that they never received my dues and they were giving me a $50 fine. So the process was starting all over again with my next new townhome association. Luckily, I had other people who were able to intervene on my behalf and said, "You received that check, the bank," because it had been sent by the bank. It was done electronically by the bank, had sent the check to the townhome association. Once the bank called the townhome association and said, "You know, we sent you that check," suddenly they found it. Suddenly the townhome association found my check when the bank had to intervene. They wanted to fine me $180.
Ms. Stanley, we need to wrap up in about 2 minutes.
$180 that they could have foreclosed on my property for, because they said they couldn't find my check. I don't think they should have the ability to foreclose on people. I don't think it's what America stands for. I don't think it's appropriate. People have told me that it violates civil rights. And Eileen and Jim wanted me to come today and tell you my story, and so I did. I don't think this bill goes far enough. I think the entire section, lines 16 through 18, need to be removed. And if they stay, there at least needs to be something inserted regarding mediation. There has to be some kind of mediation process between the homeowners and the townhome association before the foreclosure process is initiated. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you, Ms. Stanley. Representative Bells, do you have any other witnesses? I don't believe so, right?
No, I think that's it.
Okay. And if there's questions, we'll call Ms. Stanley back up if the members have questions. That, Mary Bujold, I believe, is on our list. And while she's coming forward, I want to just point out to the committee and recognize a group in the audience from Greater Mankato Leadership Institute. Welcome to our committee. Welcome to your capital. And great to have you participating. I also have two constituents that are part of the Emerging Leaders Foundation up in the audience from the Stevens County area. Welcome as well. Ms. Bujold, identify yourself for the record and who you represent, and if you can stay within 10 minutes or less, we need to try to stay on focus. And please keep your comments tailored to the amendment that is on the bill in front of us.
Yes, thank you.
I know there was a lot of other things in the bill before, and please keep them tailored to that.
Yes. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Mary Bujold. I am the president of Maxfield Research in Minneapolis, a real estate research and consulting firm, but I'm here as a representative for the Summit Homes Association. I've lived at Summit Homes, Summit House in Loring Park for probably about 17 years. I am on the board. I am the treasurer of the association, and I've served as treasurer for approximately 6 years. I'm here to really discuss, I think, the amended bill and the provision under the lien assessment that states that you will not be able to foreclose for a minor violation. And I understand the idea behind this, and I understand that minor violations really represents something that I think potentially would be an excessive situation, but I'm still very concerned about the words minor violation. I think it's still too vague. I think it also doesn't really give the association recourse against situations where we have homeowners that are potentially in violation of rules and regulations whereby it would have a material effect on the health and safety and well-being of the common residents and or significantly affect property values. I have gone through many experiences where we've had situations with violations, and I will say that oftentimes fines and assessments that are placed on the property are done so with the intent that they will change the behavior that is existing with respect to the resident and the homeowner that is living in the unit. Associations, especially our association where we live in a high-rise building, people live in very close proximity to each other. And we have to have rules and regulations. We have to have some way of being able to control violations that occur within the building in order for everyone to be able to enjoy what is a basic real estate property right, quiet enjoyment and ownership of your property. And I think that it's only reasonable that in a large-scale association that the association have an opportunity and have the authority to be able to have some kind of recourse against homeowners that are violating the rules. I understand that there are, it was mentioned before about assessments, and of course we assess for a lot of different things, but new rules are in place now in terms of reserves and other things, so it's not necessarily a situation where townhomes are not providing enough reserves for different types of rules and infractions. So I guess really my issue is mostly with the minor, the wording minor violation. I still don't understand who really would be allowed to define that, if potentially the association would be allowed to define it, or if that would still be left, who it would be left up to. So I think there needs to be more clarification in terms of what is considered minor, and potentially what types of process would be involved. I think that's another thing, is what process would be involved in this situation in order to still allow for some type of recourse through the association, but potentially there would have to be more of a process involved before there would a foreclosure or a significant lien in foreclosure take place. That's really all I have to say.
Thank you. Members, we have seven other witnesses that want to testify, so I think we'll have all of them testify, and then we'll open it up for questions. If you can jot them down for a particular witness, if you have. Mr. Gittleman, Mark Gittleman. For those of you in the audience that are still waiting, and Mr. Gittleman, if you could try to keep your comments to about 4 minutes, that's going to give us enough time. I would suggest try to focus on things that haven't been said, or quickly affirm what somebody has said if that's a position you agree. And again, if you can keep your comments to the amended language of the bill, please proceed.
I'll be very brief, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Identify yourself for the record. Welcome to our committee.
Thank you. Mark Gittleman. I'm CEO of Gittleman Management, a manager of common interest communities. Mary Bujold highlighted the very same concerns I have. I'm not going to repeat them. To add a couple more and just to go into a little bit more detail, with respect to initiating lien foreclosure on issues that involve minor violations, I agree that there's an understandable concern with a possible lien foreclosure process that's solely initiated on the basis of a very minor violation. However, if there are violations in addition to failure to pay monthly homeowner assessments, for example, it is unclear to me if the intent of the legislation is that those amounts that are due and owing for fines could be part of the lien amount if there's other amounts due and owing for non-payment of assessments, for example. So I think it would be helpful to clarify that. Also, with respect to the definition of minor violation, I would just like to echo and maybe add a little bit to what Mary said, that violations in all types of common interest communities can have a very material adverse impact on the association. And in many cases, I think parking violation was mentioned as a minor violation. When parking violations occur in fire lanes, they're very significant and can affect life safety and well-being of all members of the community. And repetitive violations of that sort represent a very significant concern to homeowner associations. There are other examples of violations that on the face of it may seem minor, noise violations, for example, but when noise violations occur at 1 in the morning and they're repetitive and they're loud and they affect a number of neighbors and owners in the community, they not only adversely impact individual owners, but they adversely impact property values, and that's a very significant area of concern. So I think it's really important that there be a solid understanding of what constitutes minor. And finally, I just want to close by thanking the committee for hearing those concerns and attempting to respond to them. I think it's really important that there be a dialogue about these issues and that there be common understanding as the committee moves forward to address these issues. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Gittleman. Doug Stramness next, and on deck would be Gene Sullivan. Welcome to our committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Good afternoon. My name is Doug Stramness. I live at 727 Summit Avenue, St. Paul. I live in a townhome association, and I'm currently the president. Professionally, I have worked with common interest communities for the past 30 years. My concern with the proposed statute or amendments to statutes is that it seems to me that there's not really been a case made for the changes. I'm not aware of any survey that's been conducted, no study, no extensive set of examples of where there's been real abuses that would be addressed by these changes. One of my concerns is anytime there's a new law, there are consequences, and often there are consequences that nobody anticipated. And in this particular case, those consequences could be significant. There are at least some consequences that I think we can foresee. The first one is currently, and we speak of minor infractions, violations. In 30 years, I have not seen anybody foreclosed because of fines for minor violations. However, the fact that the fines are a lien and the threat of foreclosure is somewhere in the background does give an association of and a straightforward, effective enforcement mechanism. And my concern is that without that mechanism, too often minor infractions would be ignored. And you might say, well, what's the problem with that? Well, if minor infractions are routinely ignored, the livability of a community becomes severely impacted over time. I think it's fairly common knowledge at this point that police forces around the country have recognized over the last several decades that if you want a livable community, you enforce laws against graffiti, trash, vandalism, those sorts of issues that from a crime standpoint could be considered minor. Another consequence is severe impact on the other homeowners in the association. Too often people talk about the association as if it were some third party that's inflicted on the homeowners. The association, more particularly the board, is elected by the homeowners. And if the will of the homeowners cannot be enforced, everybody's hurt. The third consequence is if conditions in homeowners associations are eroded, they potentially become a burden on the municipalities where they're located. And I finally want to emphasize that homeowners have recourse. It is homeowners associations are a corporation in which the homeowners are shareholders. They have voting power. They can lobby their board of directors. They can rally their neighbors to see that certain policies are changed or enforcement mechanisms are changed. Homeowners can run for the board. They can run to, they can campaign to have new board members elected. And one of the most important provisions of current law is as a homeowner, I can demand that I have a face-to-face meeting with my board of directors over any issue that they are penalizing me with regard. And given interpersonal dynamics, being able to sit face-to-face and talk about an issue can really resolve a lot of things. In addition, any foreclosure can be removed to district court, and a judge can determine whether or not the association in that particular case, whether their action is inappropriate, frivolous, or whatever. Thank you for considering my comments.
Thank you, Mr. Strand. Gene Sullivan, and then Tom Carlson on deck. Thank you for keeping it to the point as well, Mr. Sullivan.
Certainly.
Or Mr. Strandness, I should say. Mr. Sullivan, welcome to our committee. Welcome. Identify yourself for the record.
Thank you for this opportunity. My name is Gene Sullivan, and I'm president and CEO of New Concepts Management, a property management firm that our core business has always been the management of homeowner associations. First, I'd like to say there are a number of things that have been previously said by some of my fellow colleagues here before. I'm in total agreement. One concern that I still have overall with this particular bill is I do not think that it is something that is needed. I think people certainly understand and appreciate the idea that a owner of a single family home and their own property certainly has the right to put up a flag, a banner, to be able to put up a lawn sign or choose not to. The only difference in a homeowner association, instead of one person having full control, that one individual has agreed to by a contract when they entered into that homeowners association agreement that they will collectively come together and build a consensus on what they will and will not do. In the 27 years that I've been in property management, I've seen homeowner associations change their policy on allowing political signs, not allowing banners, not having pets allowed, having pets prohibited, having renters allowed. It goes on and on. And I think that there is a bigger disservice if you are giving, to me it seems like this bill would give a greater credence or authority to one individual as opposed to the other 99. And if you have a majority of those homeowners that are saying together, we wish not to have this as a policy in our association, I don't think that it's quite right to be involved in a private contractual agreement between citizens. I think that is out of place, and I think then you end up denying the property rights of the majority of the folks, because as has been previously said, people have the right to talk to their boards, to be on those to be on that board, to influence them. And again, many associations do make those changes in and out without any problem whatsoever. Lastly, concerning the lien provision, I do also wish to acknowledge that I appreciate some of the approach taken to try and understand some of the concerns that we've already mentioned in that area. The only other concern I would have in this particular with this particular provision is that it can still allow there to be additional costs that a homeowner is going to have to be responsible for in conciliation court and other in collections and in other in that particular area that I think would be unnecessary, because as has been said previously, most in 27 years I do not know of one situation where a homeowner association has foreclosed because of a minor violation fee. It has always been because of non-payment of the assessments. But it has been nice for the association to be able to add those on, because at the point that there's a refinance, at the point that there's a sale, then the association is able to collect those fees, and without any additional costs with attorneys or collections or conciliation court. So I think that's an important fact as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Sullivan. Mr. Tom Carlson is next. If you could please introduce yourself and who you represent.
Thank you. Thomas Carlson. I'm an attorney in Badness Heights. Been representing community associations for approximately 18 years. And we currently represent about 500 associations in the state of Minnesota.
Okay, proceed, Mr. Carlson. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm primarily wanting to address the fines and lien issue, and as has been indicated, I just got involved in this fairly recently, and it's been changing rapidly over the last couple of days, and I do think it's moving in the right direction. However, I think the fact that there's been as many changes as there has been is kind of an indicator that there's a lot of questions and a lot of issues that still need to be resolved. We do a lot of collection work, and what I'm looking for is clarity. I don't want to get to the end of a foreclosure or be in proceeding subsequent following a foreclosure, having spent thousands of dollars of association funds, only to have the foreclosure attacked on grounds that perhaps part of the bid included a fine that shouldn't have been in there or something like that. So the present version of the bill raises many questions in my mind, and in how I would handle proceeding with a foreclosure when a delinquent account comes to my office. It's been raised before, but what is a minor violation? I think that needs clarification. Are multiple minor violations and continuous minor violations, do they become major violations at some point? I believe one of the witnesses talked about noise violations and things that impact other people's enjoyment of their property. It may seem minor, but it's not minor to those neighbors, and oftentimes there's a real void for enforcement, because if those are minor violations, what this legislation does is it limits the association's enforcement authority to suing the person, probably in conciliation court, to get a judgment. There's a lot of people that are judgment-proof, so that threat really doesn't lend itself toward enforcing rules that need to be enforced in these associations. We have a lot of associations that have investor units that are owned by limited liability companies, oftentimes a single asset limited liability company, and you have tenants in there and you have to enforce the rules. Well, the fines are assessed against the unit and now we can't foreclose it. Our only option is to pursue a judgment against a limited liability company that the only thing they own is the unit. So there's problems with limiting the enforcement in those situations where I can see where certain rules would simply be unenforceable. And the neighbors and the other people abiding by the rules are the ones that are going to pay the price for that. Other issues I have with the current language, it indicates that the lien cannot be the basis for initiating foreclosure proceedings. I would like guidance as to when a foreclosure is initiated. If we schedule a sale and the person pays the assessments and all that's left owing is the fines, at that point do we need to stop the foreclosure proceeding? That's not clear to me in the present language. And again, my concern is getting to the end of a foreclosure and having a collateral attack on the validity of the foreclosure because there was a $100 fine included in the bid. So again, I think the fact that there's been the number of changes there has been in the last couple of days indicates that there's probably a need for some ongoing dialogue on these issues with respect to the actual foreclosure proceedings and how this would work in the real world when it gets to my desk and we're looking to have a proceeding that's not going to be subject to attack. One of the other witnesses indicated as well that they didn't necessarily see a need for this. I tend to agree with that. I've been doing this, as I indicated, for 18 years. We represent 500 associations. This isn't a significantly recurring problem. When it is a problem, you see it on the news. And it looks like it's more of a problem than it is, but there are other recourse for homeowners. If we start a foreclosure that's based on fines, they certainly have the ability to start a judicial action to challenge that, to challenge the fines and to stop the foreclosure. I've had that happen. But rather than force all fines to go through court for enforcement, it would make sense to me to simply leave it up to the homeowner in what's, in my experience, a very rare circumstance that there's a true beef with the fines, that homeowner can undertake the judicial proceedings and challenge the fines and challenge the foreclosure. Again, there's other remedies as well. Board members, if they're overzealous, can be removed. The homeowner already has a right under the statute to a hearing before the fines are levied. And I don't see the legislation as necessary, but if it is going to move forward, I think some of the issues that I've raised with respect to how it's going to work in the overall foreclosure process need to be clarified. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Carlson. Mr. Bob Schmitz. Please introduce yourself for the record.
I'm Robert Schmitz. I live at 7961 15th Street North in Oakdale, Minnesota.
Thank you, Mr. Schmitz. Proceed with your testimony.
When I looked at this bill, I was quite appalled at what I was seeing. I've lived now in three different townhome associations, one which had about 200 units, one with 50 units, and the current association is just 10 units. The last association that we live in currently is a self-managing association. I've been on that board now for 12 years. I was president for 2 years, and I've been the treasurer now for 10 years, so I've had ample experience dealing with all the issues that have been presented. And the last few testifiers have said it all as far as I'm concerned and what I would want to say, so I'm not going to try to go back over all of that ground. I want to make the observation that we hear a lot about less government in recent times. Less government, the better the government is, and staying out of your life is really something that you want to strive for in governing. And now we got a bill here before us that's going to micromanage my townhome association. I've been down this road with a number of these scenarios, and we need that lien. We need that ability to foreclose ourselves if we have to. We've come close to that on one occasion. And when that short sale got up to closing time, we were paid. They made sure, the bank made sure that we got paid after we went through 5 years of aggravation with this homeowner who wouldn't pay dues, wouldn't pay fines, wouldn't pay anything, wouldn't remove his broken down car with the oil dripping all over the the blacktop that we have to replace. So we need some leverage if we're going to have a sound townhome association. And now I discover that our legislature is getting into micromanaging us, telling us about what kind of signs and where, and illuminated signs and flags, and we can manage this stuff, and we do. It's pure democracy, and that's what I like about it. They don't like the way I'm running things on the board, they can throw me off, and I'd be very happy. Somebody else can do it. So I have no more to say. I wish that this bill would just go away.
Thank you, Mr. Schmidt. Angie French. And then Phaedra Howard, and she's the last one. So,
good afternoon.
Ms. French, identify yourself for the record. Welcome to our committee.
Thank you. Angelina French.
Angelina, I'm sorry.
I go by Angie.
Okay.
My address is 13205 Vintage Street Northwest in Coon Rapids. I am a homeowner in a 90-unit townhome association there in Coon Rapids. I'm here to testify. Contrary to some of the other homeowner comments, I chose to live in a professionally managed common interest community, or CIC is certainly the acronym for that for some of the following reasons. It's a desired lifestyle. My husband and I own a lake home in Wisconsin. We don't want the maintenance in our city home. We can enjoy lawn maintenance being provided better than we can do. We've got an irrigation system that I don't have to pay for individually. Same with snow removaling and shoveling. If I come home and they haven't shoveled my driveway, I can go to the store and come back, and it'll be done by the time I get back. We have a master insurance policy that covers the building structure and somebody taking care of the maintenance of that building at all times. It provides architectural controls. I don't have to worry about somebody painting their home or not painting their home, whatever the case may be. Providing a uniform appearance. Again, the shared maintenance costs of the streets, he talked about the asphalt, landscaping, whether it be trees, shrubs, irrigation. We happen to live in a professionally managed community. That was important to us, and it provides a nice neighborhood. When we were looking for our next home, we knew we wanted that solution. That provided us that equity opportunity, provided us property rights, as well as that maintenance-free headache environment. That's the common interest community. We live within neighbors that have that same interest. If I'm going to share a common wall with someone, which is the case in a townhome situation that I'm in, there's comfort in knowing that if for some reason they're not respectful or compliant with those rules and regulations, the management company or the board of directors is going to act on my behalf. I don't have to try to take matters into my own hands. I don't have to go to my city or the city inspectors or the police department. Somebody else is going to act on my behalf. I went into a voluntary contract when I entered into purchasing that home. I don't believe that that is intended to be a surprise. It's not meant to cause anything but, it's not meant to cause a hardship for somebody. The language, I feel, does preserve a clean, neat, uniform appearance and attempts to preserve property values. Where I live, it is set up as a nonprofit organization, and it operates as such. As you've heard, there's a board of directors. That's established by being voted in by other homeowner members. There's no qualifications. There's no criteria. It's not a matter of, you know, just one party's interest being represented. All parties are being represented. And if you feel that you need to make a change, you certainly can lobby or run for that board of directors and make those changes. If somebody happens to be violating the rules, you know, first they're given a warning. It's not a matter that they've got some big axe that comes down on them. They're first given a warning and the opportunity to correct it. It's not meant to be the consequence. It's meant to be the incentive to become compliant and to become into uniformity. Some examples might be a broken garage door or a spring on a garage door that now that garage is hanging half open. That's very unattractive. It also can allow critters to get into the building. Broken windows, dog feces, that's a big health hazard. If you're in a community that allows dogs and they're not picking up, those rules and regulations enforce that. If the situation at that point is not corrected, then there is a small fine that's imposed. You know, if that fine does get imposed, the homeowner has the opportunity to appeal it. It doesn't just end there. There's an opportunity to request the meeting with the board of directors and appeal it. I feel these rules and regulations are reasonable. They're intended to protect the majority of the people. In any multi-housing environment, multi-person environment in our cities and in our states, you know that there's a majority, and there's always going to be a minority or a small group of people that might not agree with that. You know, again, as a homeowner who chose to live in a CIC or a homeowner association, you know, I can see that these concerns that have been brought to cause this bill to be written perhaps could have been handled, you know, more individually or are more of a minor nature, that this is really a bigger answer or a bigger solution. And sort of, as you just heard, I too kind of wish it would just go away. Not sure that it's really necessary. The assessments or dues, whatever you want to call them, is the individual's proportionate share of the operating costs. That goes towards the reserves in the general fund. Ms. Stanley talked about a general fund for covering the window cost. That general fund doesn't just appear. It's not magically created. That is funded by people paying their assessments, whether they're monthly, quarterly, or annually. It doesn't matter. If they're not paid, then that general fund is depleted. Therein lies the importance in people paying it, and I rely on my neighbors to be able to pay their portion of the costs. A board of directors has a fiduciary responsibility to the other members to collect those costs, to collect those assessments. So when she made the statement that they could have chose not to foreclose, I don't believe they could have. they have a responsibility to anybody else in that association to foreclose. The associations have real expenses. If those windows were replaced, they had to be paid for somehow. Some other expenses that occur on a daily basis are utilities, insurance, maintenance costs, capital expenditures. It is true that there's been new legislation requiring replacement reserves to be adequately funded, and what's more, that there's a replacement reserve in place that talks about what things will be replaced over the next 3, 10, 15, 30 years. Homeowners have the right to review that before they buy a home or even after they've bought the home. They have a right to have input on that. If windows or siding needs to be replaced, then that's something everybody should see, that that cost needs to be incurred and paid for over the term. The fact of the matter is that HOAs, CICs, continue to become more and more popular and is necessary in the growth and development of communities. City governments are relying on the infrastructure to relieve some of the demands on its potentially limited resources, such as police, road maintenance, utility services. You know, I do want to just, in closing, sort of say, you know, there was an example given of a minor violation, which happened to be a bird feeder. I can give you a real-life example of what I experienced this past fall, in that my neighbor had a bird feeder on their deck, and we have an attached townhome, and the raccoons enjoyed that bird feeder so much that they climbed up on the roof and broke into our attic space through the soffit, and we had to have raccoons taken care of that way. Luckily, management company made the call. I didn't have to pay anybody. It was taken care of. But had that homeowner not agreed after they were informed to remove that bird feeder, that might be a minor infraction that goes untaken care of or unresponded to that does cause problems for other people. That's just one example. I guess that's all my comments. Thank you very much for the time.
Thank you, Ms. French. I understand there's a Nancy Hilden and then Phaedra Howard. So, Nancy, if you'd want to come briefly.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Nancy Hilden. I'm here today on behalf of Gaston Properties Management.
Okay.
They have about 20,000, more than 20,000 units that they manage through the 13-county metro area in Minnesota. And we are very respectfully opposed and believe that this legislation and the amendment are not necessary. In the experience and the stories that Mr. Gaston has shared with me about the kinds of things that come forward as violation, it's not, you know, it's people not, you know, leaving their garbage out, people having late night parties. So in a way, that what this does is it tips the balance toward the violator and away from the rest of the community that is trying to maintain a certain level of living. So we would encourage you to hold back on your support for this this solution and try to find some alternatives. Thanks.
Thank you. Ms. Howard. And then, members, I'll open it up for discussion. I'll give the author, I've asked or indicated to him to have a few minutes to respond to some of the statements we've heard. And after 3-4 minutes of that, I'd like to have committee discussion and proceed ahead after that. So, Ms. Howard, welcome to our committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Phaedra Howard. I am an attorney, along with Mr. Carlson, who represents homeowners associations. Been doing this not quite as long as he is, about 10 years. And I've seen pretty much everything. I'm here as a volunteer member of CIC Midwest, which is a division of the Multi-Housing Association, and speaking on behalf of the entire organization that is opposed to this legislation. I think most of my predecessors have spoken well to the issue of the lien for fines. And I'm not going to go into that in detail because they've covered it very well in depth. Obviously, the concern from a legal standpoint is, particularly with this recent amendment, I have no clue from reading this how I could possibly advise my association clients what to do to comply, whether they're covered, whether they're not covered. The language here is so vague and contains a number of undefined terms. I couldn't advise them in any way. Again, the issue with the minor violations. What is a minor violation? What is not? Who's going to decide that? But going back to the earlier provisions, with regard to the flagpoles, detached single-family dwelling, that's not defined anywhere. What does that mean? Detached from what? Does it include only your traditional single-family homes that are in an association? Does it also include, as I would interpret, what we typically refer to as detached townhomes? They've got zero lot lines. They're basically right up next to each other, but maybe don't share an actual party wall between them. Are we going to... why are we singling them out as opposed to those townhomes that are connected to each other? If you've got 10 square feet of lawn, whether you're attached to another building or not, what difference does it make as far as whether the association should be able to regulate whether or not you put flagpoles in your yard? It has the same impact on the appearance of the association regardless of whether you're attached to another building or not. Again, one, that makes no sense trying to define it that way. Why can some associations maintain their architectural control over the appearance of their property and others can't? The bill itself, which has not changed from today, doesn't give the associations any ability to regulate size, location, number of flagpoles, the installation, require that a flag be attached to them. So, you know, you can have flagpoles all over the place, not even have flags on them, just poles everywhere. I wouldn't know what to tell my clients about what they can and can't do in regard to this because it's not defined, but furthermore, it makes no sense. Again, with the campaign sign provision, a townhome or single family dwelling, again, not defined. Those aren't the terms that current statutes use, so I don't know what that means. I can't tell my clients what that means. And the whole idea that an association that has governing documents that are covenants recorded against the property that specifically state these are valid and enforceable, and if you want to change them, you need to get a specific vote of your members to do so. Why now do those associations have to go get a vote to keep their documents in place? That makes no sense. Furthermore, you haven't told me what it means to get an affirmative vote of the association, how that happens, who does it, who votes, who doesn't. How you document your vote as to whether or not this new provision applies, it makes no sense. And so my concern is that the language used doesn't give any homeowners an idea of how they can or cannot comply. The term we use in law school, for those of you who've gone, is void for vagueness. If you can't understand what this means in order to know how you can or cannot comply with it, it's void, it's unconstitutional, and I think this bill is at the very least void for vagueness. It's unconstitutional as written, but beyond that, we've got serious policy concerns as to the intent here. There's been no showing that this is needed. You're interfering with the ability of the associations to govern themselves, their corporations. You don't get involved as a government in the middle of other corporations as to how they regulate their own people. Why are we getting involved in the middle of associations? I don't understand that. I think it's unnecessary. I think it's misguided. It's ill-conceived and certainly poorly drafted. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Howard. Representative Bills, any response, or you or somebody that wants to respond, but I'd like to keep it to 3-4 minutes and then open it up for committee discussions.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and you know, I've heard what the testifiers have had to say, and I understand that, you know, from the spectrum of you know, I wish this bill would go away, to Ms. Stanley sitting here and saying it doesn't do enough, and you know, to talk about, you know, real world and how this applies in the real world and not understand what Ms. Stanley went through is in the real world too. That's probably, you know, not doing a whole lot of justice either. And sure, you know, we could have the contract law, and that these contracts exist between the people who live in the associations and the people who own the homes in those associations. But the plain fact was that this was brought under the legislature to regulate, and even though I may, regardless of what I think about that, you know, now it's become our duty to not only understand what the associations are going through, but to also understand what the consumers are going through. So I think you have to have some type of ear to, again, to Ms. Stanley and others who have had issues, and we at least have to hear their testimony and what they have to say. And I think that's something that we have to keep in mind going forward, and not to even mention current economic conditions and what families are going through with foreclosures, as, again, Ms. Stanley pointed out. But that maybe, you know, when we start throwing the foreclosure item around, that really might scare people quite considerably. So, and as the association members have pointed out, as it should, you know, it gets them to pay their fines. So is there some way, as we've worked on, is there some way to take the bill from its original form and try to have a balance? So that's what I'm looking forward to today, to have a discussion on that.
Thank you, Representative Bills. Eileen Tompkins wants to have 2 minutes to respond as well. Ms. Tompkins, and then the committee, we're going to open it up for discussion.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Eileen Tompkins. I live at 13920 Clover Lane in Rosemont, Minnesota. And I was instrumental in bringing this bill forward, and I really appreciate that you are having this hearing. I thank Representative Bills for bringing it to you, and I will have to say that associations are the only entity in this entire country that can foreclose on your property for anything at all without due process. I'm very disappointed that the bill has been watered down the way it has been. I don't think they should have the ability to foreclose for any reason at all. And I could go on about the liberties and the freedoms of this country. I won't go into that. I only have 2 minutes. But you will never have the lobbyists in this room agree with anything in this bill. This is watered down tremendously from the original bill. And I understand the lobbyists are only doing their job that they're being paid to do. So in view of that, I hope that you will support this watered-down version to give us a little bit of protection. It all started when I put up a flagpole. I have a two-story colonial home, single-family home, received no services at all from an association. But if you want to buy a house in Rosemont, you will be in an association. Five builders in the Evermore Association all belong to this giant, massive conglomerate that you have absolutely no control over. I can't say they're really bad, but the possibility of them doing something in the future is very real, and people should not be foreclosed upon for some trivial matter. I don't think any of you would agree with that. Thank you again.
Thank you, Ms. Tompkins. Questions? And Representative Bills, while we've heard the discussion and looked at the amendment, I would suggest offering an oral amendment, and maybe we just start with that. And do you have anybody else? I'm going to ask Mr. Gehring. Representative Bills, I want to see if this is okay with you, but I'm thinking I guess Ms. Howard is the one that last talked about the clarification on the voting process if somebody wants to opt out. So I'm going to ask Mr. Gehring to give us an oral amendment to clarify that a little further.
Mr. Chair and members, the suggested oral amendment is on the amendment A4, page 1, line 12. After the term conducted, insert, in accordance with any procedures or requirements for voting contained in the homeowner association document, comma. So that whole sentence would read from the beginning, an association governed by a homeowner association document executed before August 1st, 2012 may retain existing restrictions that conflict with this section by affirmative vote of the association conducted in accordance with any procedures or requirements for voting contained in the homeowner association document no later than July 30th, 2013.
Any questions on that? And one more time. typo, I think. July 30th should say July 31. Would you agree, Mr. Gehring?
Mr. Chair, yes, I agree.
I'll incorporate that in my oral amendment. Any questions on that? Members, what it basically would say is the governing documents of the association shall govern how the affirmative vote should be taken.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hellstrom.
Thank
to
you.
The oral amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just for some clarification on that, I have actually seen a number of governing documents, and sometimes there are different votes required for different types of actions. Some require a majority of the membership, some require mailings to be sent out, and so you could have different standards for voting for different types of things in the same document.
Representative Hellstrom, what should be the case, each document would have its own way of changing its bylaws. Some would be majority, some would be two-thirds, some would be three-fourths. The intent is that those documents and how those bylaws would be changed would be the threshold that would be needed if an association was going to affirm and continue their ban on campaign signs. Does that make sense? Representative Holberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And my comments are kind of along the same line, is that I've certainly learned a lot of things about associations in the last couple of days, one being that I never want to live in one. number two, these are all set up differently, and sometimes the board can make a decision, and then sometimes it is the whole body with different thresholds, et cetera. I think that this issue does need to be clarified, but I don't think that we always do our best work in committee with trying to come up with language when we don't have all the nuances of what we're trying to address. It's my understanding that the motion that was made was to send this to Commerce. Is that correct?
That's correct.
What I'd like to do, and I still have concerns with the bill, I think we've made some improvements, but I'm hoping that maybe we can move this without recommendation, have some dialogue here in the next 20 minutes about what we see as concerns, et cetera, and ask the author. We have the chair of the Commerce Committee here to listen to the comments and concerns and try and work something out with the people that actually work in this area to make sure that it makes sense.
Point well taken, Representative Holberg. When we come to the vote, I will come back to you.
Well, Mr. Chair, at this point, I guess what I'm saying is that this oral amendment, I would vote no on the oral amendment because I'm not sure it does what we need it to do.
Okay. Any other discussion on the oral amendment? Representative Bills, you're the author. You tell me if your intent would be to have the governing documents govern the affirmative vote, or it would be to have the governing documents govern the affirmative vote, or it could be just a simple majority vote. That would be easier language to put in. But
thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would actually, I think Representative Holberg has a good point, and that we could talk with some of the stakeholders still, and get forward that way. I think that would be a fine way to go.
Very good. I'll withdraw my oral amendment.
Thank you, sir.
Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And you know, it's always scary when you ask a question that you don't know the answer to. Representative Holberg and I have been around this block a couple of times on this committee, and we're not lawyers. Representative Bills, could you define minor for me? Because frankly, it was a minor offense when my youngest daughter came home 15 minutes past curfew. It was a little bit more of a major problem when my oldest daughter came home 15-20 minutes past. So different people, different situations, different times create different minor and major infractions. So that's one of the problems I see with the bill. You have no definition of what that is. So maybe you can help me out.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman, Representative Mahoney. What I guess what I'm trying to get to, and maybe with being here among a team of lawyers mostly, is that I don't think somebody should be foreclosed on for hanging up a birdhouse or parking their car in the wrong space or a small landscaping violation or painting their door a wrong color. I would not want to see somebody go down that road. I sure do understand that, and as testifiers have come forward, I sure do understand that these minor violations, however they are defined, could build up. Whether it's by a dollar amount or by some other means, I guess that's where I was going with it.
Right. Any other discussion? Representative Lesh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Bills, have you ever heard the song Flagpole Sitta by Harvey Danger?
Mr. Chair, Representative Lesh, I have not.
Mr. Chair, is that a snowboarding song?
It's not. It's pre-snowboarder Tool kind of music. No, it's actually it's off their 1996 album, Where Have All the Merrymakers Gone, Representative Hoppe. But Representative Bills, I think it'd be a great anthem for you moving forward on this. Great song. As I listened to the testimony, I got kind of from both sides. I mean, your first testifier laid out this parade of horribles, all these terrible things that happened, which sounded bad. And I agree with Representative Olberg. If I wasn't already very disinclined to live in an association, I certainly would be after that happened to me. And then I hear that she just moved into another one and immediately racked up some issues with them, too. So I don't know, maybe there's a pattern there. But and then on the other side, I hear one gentleman come up and say, we should really keep government out of our business, and why would state government come in and regulate what associations are doing? I think about it from an individual perspective, and that's the heaviest regulation I've ever seen. Whether or not I can put up a bird feeder, give me a break. You want to talk about the long hand of government reaching in? Associations do that a heck of a lot more than this state would ever consider doing. I wouldn't pass. So on both sides, I'm find myself thinking legitimately which direction I'm going to go on this. But I wanted to know why one of my questions was regards to that minor violation language, but also with respect to how you came to the conclusion about how you were going to parse the issues regarding political signs encapsulated here, because for a lot of us, we consider that a fundamental nature of participation in this democracy. But for some associations, they think, the political process doesn't matter, except for maybe our political process for running for the board or something. But the greater state or federal shouldn't really invade here. How did you sift through that and decide what was more important, the fundamental contractual rights excluding participatory democracy from association and the fundamental aspects of belonging to your community where you vote for public elected officials?
Representative Bills.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Representative Lesh. In terms of the amendment that was put on, I just want to clarify on A4, right? Yeah, that just was a discussion with the various association groups and trying to reach some type of consensus on what would be. I certainly don't understand what you're saying, is that it should just be a fundamental right, but yet you're dealing, you do deal with organizations that have a community interest, and you've signed a contract. But you know, again, from my opinion, I don't think that you ever sign away your right to political speech. So trying to move this process forward, this was part of the compromise.
Maybe, Mr. Chair, maybe I could ask it this way.
Representative Lesh.
So in the history of this country, there are plenty of examples of rights to contract that were later stricken down by the Supreme Court, saying, no, that's an illegal part of a contract. You can no longer have running covenants in your neighborhoods that go with the title that say you can't sell this house to a black person. That's illegal, and the Supreme Court has decided that. There are other running covenants that have been ruled illegal as well, but obviously we still retain rights to contract. But what your bill right here is trying to do is walk that line between those of us who say, no, participating in an election is a fundamental part of being a citizen. And then there are those who say, well, no, fundamental part of being a citizen is the right to contract, and so we should be able to exclude that from our neighborhood. You're trying to walk this line here, which is really precarious. So maybe it's too, rather than our, for our time here, and considering the fact, I don't know, maybe Representative Holberg's suggestion will prevail, but I guess I won't ask a question in light of that, Mr. Chair. So,
all right. Representative Lesch, the language on the not restricting political signs is similar to what is in state law already for municipalities, because that occurs in municipalities from time to time, and the legislature a while ago has said no, that's not a reasonable restriction. And so, just so you know, and if it helps your comfort level, that's where the language came from. Other discussion? Representative Bills, I've got a question for you, and maybe Ms. Howard. What language have they brought you since last May when all the parties discussed coming up with compromise language? Is this language they brought you, or have you got other language from them to present to the committee?
Mr. Chairman, I've had some discussions but haven't seen any language.
Okay. Ms. Howard, do you...
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We've gave Representative Bills and Mr. Reynolds our contact information in order to set up a meeting to discuss it, and we were never contacted for that meeting. Frankly, I don't think there's any language that would help this. I think it's a poor bill to begin with, and I don't think anything would help. I think the concerns that are being brought forward about how associations operate, if anything, it's really a matter of education. People go into these, at least with the rights to have the information about how the association operates. The law requires a seller to give a prospective buyer a copy of the governing documents, a resale disclosure, and another number of other pieces of information about the association. And they have a right to back out of the sale if they don't like what they see. So if there's an issue, it's people aren't reading the documents, they are not taking the time. I think there's a lot of realtors that need to be educated about what to tell their clients when they're dealing with sales and associations, because clearly I've seen the realtors don't get it, they don't understand, and they're misguiding their clients as to what can and cannot be done when you buy a property in an association. So I think if there's something that needs to be done, maybe it's on the education side, maybe the realtors need required courses in associations, something along those lines. I don't think anything here is necessary, and I don't know how we can make language that would change it into something that's necessary to begin with. That's my personal opinion. But
Ms. Howard, refresh my memory. Were you at the working group in November?
I was.
Ms. Howard, don't indict our staff and say they weren't including you. You just made that statement. I've just been confirmed you were invited. You gave us the list of who to invite to that committee. I don't appreciate you telling our committee that you were not contacted. You've got the phone. It works both ways. We asked you last May to get involved with this. If you've chose not to, don't come and indict our committee staff over it.
Mr. Chair, I apologize. I think you misunderstood me.
I heard exactly what I heard. So I'm telling you that is not the way we're going to conduct this committee. And if you want to be involved in it, I'm suggesting you pick the phone up as well. But you were invited. Representative Lesch was there. Representative Drazkowski, Representative Hillstrom. So that is not a true statement that you gave our committee. Any further discussion, members? If not, Representative Holberg.
Mr. Chair, I was a little bit late to committee. It's my understanding your motion was to move this to Commerce with recommendation to pass. Is that correct?
It is Representative Hoberg. I am going to take your suggestion and amend my motion, which refers this to Commerce Committee. Without recommendation, I think there's been a few points that are validly made, some incorrect facts. But Representative Hoppe, I know, is interested in this, and I think Representative Bills has done a lot of work on this. We will stay involved. I know if this comes to the floor, Representative Lesch, I think, made some points, as well as Representative Mahoney. Representative Bills, I hope you take them to heart. And I would ask the opponents, if you've got a better way to include free speech in your associations, get involved. We are going to move this to the Commerce Committee. If the committee agrees with that, without recommendation, I will move that the House File 1254 be passed to the Commerce Committee without recommendation. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. Members, we've done the minutes. We will see you the next meeting. We'll send out the agenda. Meeting adjourned.